Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Laird Show. I am your host, Jim Laird. Today's show is brought to you by Grammarly. If you suck at spelling and grammar as much as I do, you will love Grammarly. I know for me, in the past, I've had to send off emails and different things that I would attempt to write off to like my sister or a client or a friend, spell checks so I wouldn't, and grammar checks so I didn't look like a buffoon. But since I started using Grammarly, I've been able to write emails and it works on your phone. It works on multiple browsers. It works in Word. It's pretty cool. It works on WordPress. It really helps clean up, your writing and make suggestions for you. There's obviously a free version. There's also a paid version. So check that out. And if you're unable to, support the show by checking out Grammarly, you know, obviously now that I'm hosting my own show, I've got to host it. There's costs that come along with that, and I'd appreciate your support. If you found the shows that I've done in the past and these shows helpful, I would appreciate you supporting me. And one of the ways you can do that that's super simple and, you know, won't cost you really anything in addition to what you're already spending is if you go to my website, or there'll be a link in the show notes, and you click on one of the products that I have on there that's an Amazon product. They're all products I recommend, of course. But you don't have to buy that product for me to get credit. Say, for example, you click on an Aerodyne bike or a roller or one of the books I recommend, and then you search for other things. After, you know, you do that search, I'm going to get credit for anything you purchase. So like if you go on you say, hey, you know, Jim, you've really helped me out. I'd like to help you cover the cost of your podcast or, you know, something along those lines. You can click on one of those links and then you can do your Christmas shopping. And then I would get credit for that. So I would appreciate that. If you find that I've helped you out over the years, if you could help support the show, I'd really like to hire someone, to edit this professionally, so it sounds the best possible, and to do the show notes and all that jazz that I'm not very good at. Because after all, I want to put out the best product possible for you that you can enjoy. So on today's show, I did an interview with Molly and Dylan of Circadian Health several months ago. It was in the summer. And we tried to do like a Facebook Live, YouTube Live, simultaneous broadcast, but the software I was using just didn't work out. The online program, it just kept freezing. And so we redid the interview and we did it on Skype and I shared it on Facebook. So I'm taking the audio off that. And you can also watch it. I'm going to put the Facebook link up and you can, YouTube. We shared it on YouTube and I'll put that link up in the show notes as well if you want to watch it on YouTube instead. But, they get into how light affects health, and they're two medical students that are graduating here from medical school, and obviously most doctors don't talk to you about health and light and how circadian biology affects your health. And you know, I really got interested in this several years ago, kind of stumbled upon it, just like anything else. When you have a health challenge or some sort of adversity, about 6 years ago, maybe, I can't remember the exact date, but we were doing the Train Like a Girl seminar, Molly Galbraith and I were, and it was at either the Hilton or the Hyatt downtown, I think Hilton, and we had people come in from all over the world, and I got talked into doing my one and only pedicure, and I almost lost my leg. I got cellulitis really bad, and luckily they were able to control it, get it under control with antibiotics, but I came pretty close to having my leg amputated. And so they told me that I would have reoccurring infections. The first year I had to be really careful because anytime I'd nick my leg, because my lymphatic system was so trashed on that right leg, that I could get an infection, and that happened a couple times. But then after that, it started happening without any kind of an injury. It would just happen full body. I'd get fever-like symptoms. And then it would just get really bad. And, you know, of course, the more antibiotics I did, the more antibiotics it would require. And it just kept coming back year after year. So I started, you know, after having two or three sessions like that a year, I started doing some digging because the doctors really didn't have anything other to offer than, you know, oral antibiotics for the rest of my life, which I really didn't want to do. I started looking around and probing around and I ran into a very controversial figure named Dr. Jack Cruz, a neurosurgeon out of New Orleans at the time. I think he's in Destin, Florida now. He's all over the place. But I started interacting with him, and he basically was like, so tell me about your life. Tell me about, you know, where you live and what you do. And, you know, I told him I was a strength and conditioning coach. I got up at like 6 in the morning, worked from 6 in the morning till 8 at night, and pretty much did that Monday through Friday. And then I got out on the weekends a little bit. He's like, when's the last time you seen sunrise? I was like, it's been a while, you know, and I would usually wear sunglasses if I went outside. And, so he basically was like, you're an effing zoo animal. And I was like, okay. And then he went on to explain to me, you know, how sunlight regulates your sleep cycle, it regulates your hormones, your mood, your, you know, melatonin, all these things are all regulated by light, and your immune system is regulated by light. And so I started, you know, he gave me a bunch of things to read, Health and Light by John Ott. He gave, you know, The Influence of Ocular Light Perception on Metabolism in Man and Animal by Fritz Hollowich. And if you really want to bend your brain in half, Light and Shaping Life, Biophotons and Biology and Medicine by Roland Van Wink. And I started implementing some of his strategies. You know, I blocked off some of my morning sessions and started going outside every morning, get my sun, you know, wean myself off sunglasses, started taking sun breaks during the day, started basically, change some lighting in the gym, tried to keep the doors open more often, and then wearing blue blockers at night, and then getting away from the screens and really, you know, working on getting things dark when the sun goes down. And, you know, within no time, I've started feeling better. My health improved, my sleep improved. Everything just got better pretty quickly. And I went for a very long time, I think almost 2 years before I had, you know, here recently, a couple weeks ago, I got in a car wreck, which I think the stress of that kind of, caused my infection to kind of reoccur, but it wasn't as bad as it had been in the past. And I was able to knock it down pretty quickly. So, you know, this was a huge kind of eye opener to me, something this obvious and something, you know, that is so simple. But when you think of it, I was spending 98% of my time inside, and that's what the majority of people today, especially young kids, are spending the majority of their time inside, and they aren't getting any sun. They're not getting out in nature, and it's no shocker to me that with so many people are struggling today. So this interview with Molly and Dylan, they do an awesome job of kind of giving their background of how they got into this stuff, and then basically, you know, explaining some really complicated things in a really simple way. So, you know, anytime I do an interview like this or I do a show, it's not necessarily I'm trying to convince you of anything. A lot of it is I'm just trying to make you think about things in a different way and make you look at your life and be like, you know, I'm not feeling so hot, kind of depressed. You know, how much time have I actually spent outside? You know, that's something really simple. You can start with 10-minute walks in the morning. I'm trying to give you simple things that you can try for your self-experimentation to figure out, you know, what works for you. And you might think I'm a complete loon bat, and I'm totally cool with that. But I just want you to think about things in a different way. And that's always, you know, kind of my goal when I do, you know, shows, or I want people to kind of think about things in maybe in a way they haven't in the past. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show, or I hope you're going to enjoy the show. Sorry, I'm not used to doing this intro, but, hope you enjoy it, and I look forward to getting really consistently putting out more information now that, you know, my schedule's a little bit more conducive to doing consistent shows. So that being said, if you have anyone you'd like me to interview, you have questions you'd like me to answer, you know, please leave in the comments below. You can also email me, Jim Laird, G-Y-M-L-A-I-R-D @gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook or Instagram. I look forward to hearing from you. Enjoy the interview. You know, we're going to talk about light and the importance of your circadian biology and how it affects your health. It's interesting. We tried this live on Facebook and YouTube, and it turned out to be a total disaster. So I apologize if you tuned into that. We're all kind of new at this technology thing, and we're trying. It's a necessary evil for us, so we're not really. I'm not. I'll speak for myself. I won't speak for them. I'm not very good at it.
And so we had some technical issues and we had to stop. So we're going to record this and then we'll re-release it. So my apologies. But that being said, you know, we kind of touched on the other interview of like, you don't really hear doctors talking about light environment or circadian rhythm or sleep. Molly and Dylan are in their final year of medical school and they have this channel called Optimum Circadian Health. So how do you guys get to the, you know, you're in medical school. This isn't really something that's, you know, commonly pushed in like the modern medical like paradigm. So you guys are about to graduate medical school and you've got a channel called Optimum Circadian Health. Kind of how did that come about for you guys?
Well, we already talked about how we kind of stumbled into this whole knowledge and realm of health, I guess, that they don't really teach in medical school. And then a lot of the positions we work with don't really know about. And we saw that kind of as an opportunity because every patient that we see or even our colleagues that are struggling through medical school or just like a day in the hospital because they're just either too tired or can't concentrate or they have all these other issues that are related to their environment, we wanted to be able to help them. It's really hard to just watch them suffer through everything. And even patients who are staying overnight in their hospital, they're like, I can't sleep here. There's too many noises. There's too many lights. So we kind of wanted to get the word out and be able to break things down so people can understand it, like anyone who wants to learn it. And we are in a public health program in addition to the MD. And so we started by creating a course and actually did a randomized pilot control trial and evaluated the course to see how it would perform against standard sleep advice. And it performed pretty well. We found that it improved sleep quality and daytime fatigue. So that was cool. It was a smaller trial and originally in creating that program, we're like, oh, we can get this out to people and whatnot. And then we kind of realized that in order to get the word out to people, you kind of have to have people listening to you.
That's correct. If I could cut you off right there, not to be rude, but if you guys, let's assume that nobody heard that disaster that we tried to do with the live thing. Okay. So if you, I think it's very valuable to people if they heard your story. So Dylan, if you kind of wanted to just tell your story of how you got into this, and then
settled in the pre-Cambrian era. Not that far back. So in grad school, when I was starting to have some sleep issues, I would like wake up multiple times a night, and I would just kind of like start my day at 4 a.m., which was kind of cool because I could be like a complete gunner and like have everything I need to get done by like 8 a.m. People were like, "Oh my God, you're so smart," but not really. And then I would have to eventually sneak off and take a nap at like 11 a.m. I'd always tell my advisor I was going to like have a meeting with someone, but I would just like walk about half a mile across campus and take a nap on this really nice place. And then I would come back and I would have like marks all over my face. She was looking weird. But the point is that my sleep was getting like awful, and I was like all gung-ho into the like nutrition stuff, the exercise stuff. Like I would always listen to like all these different podcasts, like Bulletproof, I guess that's how you pronounce it now, like Rob Wolf, listen to him a lot, Chris Crusher, all these people, and I was like, none of this like is working. And then I distinctly remember it was the Ben Greenfield podcast with Jack Cruz, and it's this guy who's a neurosurgeon who's just like, it wasn't really like an interview, it was like Ben Greenfield would say things, and then this other person, Jack Cruz, would just like have this like blitzkrieg of words, which half of which you understood, and at the end you're just like, maybe what just happened? Like you needed a therapist at the end of that. Like why is he talking about polar bears and sharks when all I want to know is like how many crunches I should do? So then I got into his work, and when I was looking, I started with the CT series because it was in January, I think. I want to say, what year is it now? 2019. So it must have been 2015, and he's talking about the CT series, and I'm like, oh, this sounds like so easy, like cold thermogenesis, let's do this, this will be good for you. And the first few times I was doing it, I would meditate in the park when there was like snow on the ground, and the funny part was the State College police came up to me and they asked me what fraternity I am and how, like, why are they hazing me? And then I was trying to explain to them the benefits of the cold, and they just walked away. So that was good. But then when I kept doing that and continued to not be arrested, the benefits and just like my cognition and function throughout the day, and then like my sleep would slowly improve. And then as I started to get more into that work, because when you start to understand, like, it's not about eating acai berry bowls with your girlfriends at Fresh Harvest, whatever, to try to maximize your health. It's about, like, understanding how things work at the smallest scales, how, like, cold affects how mitochondrial function is, and then from there you get into how light is sort of the communicator of pretty much biology within yourself and then also between you and your environment. And then realizing that that's really the fundamental stuff you have to focus on. And then from that point, I realized, okay, maybe having a PhD in exercise physiology or really myopic area isn't going to be like super helpful to allow me to learn more of that and help other people. So that's why I left that world and entered the medical school world. And sort of since then, I've been continuing to learn that knowledge. And now with Optimal Circadian Health, we've just been trying to teach people that knowledge in a way that's more applicable, because everybody sleeps. I think the statistics are 100.0% of people sleep. And you can check that.
And animals.
You can check it. Yes, animals too. And it's just a way to sort of show people how, like, all these things come together. Like, if you see the sunrise in the morning, that'll help you sleep at night. So it's just like an easier way to sort of pitch these concepts to people. And it's like been working really well for us. And it's allowed us to get through medical school, which is pretty time intensive. And it's also like it's at the worst times possible. Like, we have to like be at the hospital at 5 a.m. to like say hi to a surgery patient who's going to get like their appendix out at 7 a.m. And then all this other stuff we have to do. And it's just been really helpful in helping us get the most out of our environment for our health.
So Molly, how did you get into this whole deal as far as your history of your health and what kind of encouraged you to go in this direction?
So there are several things. I can give you the long or the short story. I'm going to try and give you the short story. So basically, I met Dylan in medical school. I had been volunteering at a free clinic, which would go into the night until like 11 p.m. And after a couple weeks of doing that, I started having sleep issues for the first time in my life. And Dylan encouraged me to try blue blockers and then, you know, get out in the sun and blah, blah, blah. And that the blue blockers were foreign to me, and I was very self-conscious of them. But being outside was not foreign to me because I grew up sailing since I was 8 years old, and I was out on the water, sailed competitively internationally for my whole life. And I found that when I stopped doing that, that's when I started having health issues and sleep issues. And it was really incredible because there were the world-renowned specialists who had no idea what was going on with me, and they couldn't figure it out. And when I started doing all of this stuff, all of my issues were gone.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, I was having, you know, how I got into this is I ended up having a pedicure, my one and only pedicure. A young lady talked me into getting a pedicure. And now, knowing my new knowledge, my redox potential was very low. And I ended up getting a very bad staph infection, almost had my leg amputated. And so I was having reoccurring staph infections multiple times a year, and every time, of course, I was getting more and crazy antibiotics, vancomycin, all that good stuff, and it wasn't working as well, you know, and it was causing massive stress on my body. And they were talking to me about doing, you know, oral antibiotics the rest of my life, washing my entire body with like hydrogen peroxide on a regular basis, and nobody really offered me any kind of an exit plan other than just trying new drugs. And, you know, I remember I saw Dr. Cruz talk at a seminar at PaleoFX when he got, you know, basically everybody hated on him because he talked about how stupid it was to eat a banana in Boston in December. And, I thought at the time he was a lunatic. And, you know, Dylan, my hat's off to you. I don't think I've ever heard anybody explain the way Dr. Cruz talks better than Blitzkrieg words you don't understand. I mean, dude, that's That is unbelievable. You just put the Metallica song Blitzkrieg on in the background. That'd be just awesome. You just have that with Dr. Cruz meme like coming across the screen. That'd be great. But, you know, I reached out to him, and the first thing he asked me was like, okay, tell me about your life. Like, what do you do? And I was like, well, I get up at 5 a.m. and I work till 7 o'clock at night. And he goes, you're a fucking zoo animal. And I said, zoo human, zoo creature. And I was like, well, yeah, I guess you're right. And he's like, the sun runs everything from your digestion to your immune system to your, you know, your sleep. And he's like, man, he's like, you gotta make some major changes in your life. And the interesting thing is since I made those changes, since I, you know, canceled my mornings and make my mornings a priority, and I get outside and you know, I protect my eyes and my skin at night, you know, I was having multiple infections a year. I haven't had one in 4 years, you know. So it's crazy that, you know, if we look at history, we if you show people pictures of nature, their anxiety and depression goes down. We know that going outside is beneficial to us. I mean, there's study after study after study after study about this stuff, but nobody seems to even, you know, when you tell them that, like, you need to go outside more, you need to, you know, you need to get your morning light, they roll your eyes at you, but they'll be happy to go get, you know, toxic chemicals injected into them, or they'll try some, you know, crazy, you know, supplement that costs a shit ton of money, but they won't take something as simple as, like, you know, crack your window in your car, you know, get your sunglasses, take them off. They all think they're going to explode. Their eyes are going to fall out if they see some natural light. How do we get to this point where we went from, you know, we like the Mayans and the Egyptians and all these different cultures that literally worship the sun, to now where we've got doctors telling people that, you know, all you need to do is take a vitamin D supplement. You never need to go out. Like, you, the paler you are, the better. Like, how did we get to this extreme?
Certainly a lot of that happens with the, like, as time, like with the Egyptians, it came like the social class thing, like the golden chain at the time was to be able to, like, be pale, to be inside while everyone else was toiling outside. And as time progressed, the UK during their Industrial Revolution, they're pretty much inside 24/7. That's actually the time when rickets was a pretty big thing, where kids were born and then they would just be inside for their entire lives. They'd be born by vitamin D depleted moms, and then they continue to be inside, and then their bones would just be completely malformed. And then they stumbled into this, like, oh man, maybe if we put them in the sun, this will enhance some vital substance in them. And they found out that was the case and learned how vitamin D was pretty much essential for health and stuff like that. But then the issue was that the modern mind sort of, like, rebounded. Like, well, like, if you just need that one biomolecule chemical, why don't we just outsmart everything so we can continue to be cranking things in textiles and whatever industrial revolution productivity they desired, and just be able to add in this, like, molecule they thought was essential, when it was really, like, the sunlight exposure that led to that molecule. That's really the actual, like, important part.
I also think there's a huge cultural component, because if you think of the early 1900s, right after the light bulb was introduced to the world, essentially, that's when it was really cool and hip to just be able to stay out and go to parties and to, like, have this electricity thing that was a symbol of status, and then became an opportunity for people to just be able to do whatever they want, whenever they wanted, and to improve productivity in factories and whatnot. So, and then that kind of just, I guess, escalated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would definitely do it. What is the difference between getting your vitamin D from the sun and getting it from a pill?
Mm-hmm. So when you take it in a pill, you kind of short circuit this whole, like, awesome pathway of amazingness. That's what they call it in literature. They don't. And so the sun hits your skin, and then it goes through that chemical reaction where it takes sulfated cholesterol, and then it goes all the way down to sulfated vitamin D, yada, yada, yada. Everyone knows that. But what the more important, well, not more important, but, like, the other components are that you get something called filaggrin, which is a glycoprotein that is typically low in people who have, like, eczema, allergies, and certain autoimmune conditions. And you also get something called vitamin D decomposition products, VDDP. And those also have their own immunogenic actions and also on cellular growth. So if you just take the pill, you don't get any of that other stuff. And you can possibly have a negative feedback loop on the filaggrin and the VDDP. And then if you're not getting UV light from the sun, that also means you're not getting infrared light and red light from the sun, which has its own whole slew of benefits from like bioenergetics to cellular metabolism and beyond.
Yeah, and I think the most interesting thing is that we know that if you're outside, the higher your vitamin D, the more you're exposed to sunlight, your risk of dying and having any disease is lower. And the risk of skin cancer is very, very low compared to the benefit that you receive. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned earlier, people are just really terrified. Like they think if they go outside, if the sun touches their skin without any sunscreen in their makeup or on their lips or anything, that something is going to happen to them. And I think there's just this big cultural perspective towards the sun. And if people do want to go to the beach or they do want to go outside, they show up at 11, noon, 1 p.m., people just have this perspective that they don't want to start any sort of social thing until the afternoon or nighttime. And they look at you crazy if you want to go to the beach in the morning or do anything in the morning. So I think it's the combination of the studies that people are kind of basing everything off of, which are flawed, and the cultural perspectives that have kind of come out of that and just exploded.
Can I share a follow along for the listeners? This will be a good fact. So this is from something we've written, haven't released yet, but if you go to the first step in this exercise is to find the World Health Organization report called the Global Burden of UV Radiation. Okay, so that's step one. And then this report overall is just a documentation of across the world how many bad things happen when people have too much UV radiation, and they also determine how many bad things happen when you don't get enough UV radiation. All right, so this is the 2000, we'll have to give you the link. You go to page 76, and I've done this in detail so people can't call me out on the BS. You go to page 76. This shows you that a lack of UV radiation leads to 3.3 billion disability life years. That means quality of life lost over a year. So that's a lack of UV light. Getting too much UV light leads to, this is on page 78, leads to 40,970 disability life years.
It's that crazy.
Ratio is 80 to 1.
Yeah.
So
I remember reading. I remember reading about melanomas. Like I think it was like 7,000 people a year die from melanoma.
It's all skin cancers combined.
Yeah, and like the number of deaths from vitamin D deficiency related things is like it's in the hundreds of millions of people. Like heart disease, cancers, all these things are related to that. And people just it just blows my mind when I talk to people about it and I share my story and my opinion that I had the police called on me because I was sitting out here last December with no shirt on. Mm-hmm. Some lady called the police on me and the police pulled up and they're like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm just getting my morning light, dude." And they're like, "Oh, really?" Like somebody complained there was like a gorilla sitting outside with no shirt on. And I was like, "Okay, like we're so been conditioned that we have to have clothes on all the time and all this stuff. That's crazy, but it's just insane that I will tell people like, "Hey, why don't you wean yourself off of sunglasses or crack the window open in your car or get some light in the morning?" But they'll run around naked in their house in front of computer screens, TVs, fake lights at 1-2 o'clock in the morning and not even think about it at all, but they're scared to death of something that we've evolved with for hundreds of thousands or who knows how long. It's been more than a week and less than like 70 million or 70 quadrillion years, so somewhere in that window. And how we got here, we'll probably never know, but it just blows my mind how people have gotten so skewed on this stuff.
And the other interesting thing is that I think it depends on the person, but a lot of people are afraid of the aging effects of what they've heard of the sun, and they always refer to that truck driver who, like, one side of his face looks like really old and wrinkly and whatnot, and the other side doesn't. But they don't really understand the reasoning behind that, and how someone who could have certain exposure to light could be different from someone else's exposure to light. And maybe I should be more specific. Like, there are a lot
well,
of...
Well, and also that light's coming through glass, so it's
yeah,
not
light,
real
sun. Yeah, so the light's coming
real
through
sun.
Glass. That person, you don't know if they're a smoker or a non-smoker, what type of light they're exposed to different parts of the day. So why I brought this up is because a lot of my class colleagues, they don't care about the blue light thing and that it might be affecting their circadian rhythm or their eyes. They do care about the fact when I bring up, especially the women, when I bring up that this dermatology paper from 2018 November says that blue light downregulates these pores in your skin. They're called aquaporins, which means like water pore. And they decrease the amount of those in your skin. And so that essentially dehydrates your skin, and they've shown that exposure to the amount that we receive in one day without even screens accelerates the aging process of your skin to the nth degree. And they're like, whoa, I didn't know that. Like that gets them interested. But it's just fascinating to me that some people they either don't really care, or they don't have a health concern that hasn't brought them to their wit's end to that they need to care. And a lot of them just don't want to take the time to learn. A lot of our classmates and colleagues have expressed interest in learning about these sorts of things. And some of them have asked us more than others, but they're not really willing to delve into the literature themselves. You'll ask them, okay, can you tell me a little bit about what you know about the original research that showed that UV light is harmful? And tell me why it makes sense to you. And they're like, oh, well, I don't have the time to do that. Or I don't really want to do that. You know what I mean? So
it's kind of like the lipid hypothesis. You know, most people just accepted that as fact without actually going yeah. back and looking at the original research, which was totally, totally flawed. It's really, really interesting. So let's talk about the typical American or the typical modern human. You know, they don't spend any time outside in the morning to build their tolerance for sun in the afternoon. They're up till, you know, especially with me, I was up till 11, 12 o'clock at night watching YouTube, trying to relax, and then getting up at 5 in the morning. So on the front end, I'm not getting enough vitamin D. And then on the back end, I'm not getting any melatonin because I'm not outside in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not releasing the melatonin that the very little melatonin that I do have on the back end. And so right there is your typical American. What are the consequences of that over time of, like, you know, very limited vitamin D and then, you know, melatonin on the back end of that? Like what happens when somebody does that year after year after year?
So the first thing is it's kind of a vicious downward spiral, because when you don't get vitamin D, that actually decreases the, I guess, accuracy of your circadian clocks. And you can actually, because when you're not getting UV light, you're also preventing yourself from increasing the amount of melatonin you're going to get at night. And then on the back end, you're talking about, because when you don't have enough melatonin at night, the next day, your skin is not going to produce as much vitamin D. And then it kind of starts that whole cycle off, onwards and downward. And then the actual sort of clinical outcomes of that. Oh geez, let's just start. Where to start? So like, I'm gonna
cancer.
Go with the liver. I was gonna go with the liver. We'll go
okay,
with cancer
liver.
So for liver, like non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, the one of the top risk factors is having like a disrupted circadian rhythm. There's even a paper out there that says like maybe we should call it circadian syndrome instead of metabolic syndrome, because when your timing is off, instead of being able to properly take in nutrients and then shuttle them out to various places in the body, your liver just accumulates fat and it just starts to grow there and grow there and grow there. And then people have this liver that looks like they've been drinking like a six pack of beer every night. And then for cancer, one of our videos, I think is coming out soon. Yeah, it's just, if you look at all the hallmarks of cancer, the genomic instability, the angiogenesis, the metastasis, the disrupted metabolism, like the Warburg shift, and all these like other growth factors that get upregulated. Melatonin fights every single one of those pathogenic factors on the way to cancer. And that's why when you look at someone like shift workers, you look at truck drivers, you look at flight attendants and pilots, all these people who have massive circadian disruption, either because they are working at the wrong time or they're just constantly and chronically jet lagged, they have higher risk of cancer pretty much across the board. So that was cancer. Where are we going next? Heart disease. So for that, most heart attacks happen between like 8 and 10 a.m. And one of the reasons for that is someone who has a heart attack, your heart has its own like endogenous circadian rhythm where it's supposed to like increase its work capacity, which is why like cardiovascular performance peaks at a certain time of the day, like around like between 2 and 6 p.m. But if that rhythm is off and then your blood pressure rhythm is ahead of that, say like your blood vessels constrict, then your heart has to work harder and it can't. And then a heart that's been sort of subjected to chronic circadian disruption just can't put up with it anymore. And then it just kind of croaks and falls out of place. Strokes is kind of a similar scenario. What else is on the list there? Alzheimer's, neurodegeneration. Oh, that's a huge one. So if you take someone, you take a willing volunteer, I don't know why anyone would ever do this study, you take them and then you say, we're going to only let you sleep 5 hours tonight, and in the morning we're going to stick a big needle in your spine and see how much amyloid plaque is in your CSF fluid.
What's amyloid plaque, Dylan?
That's the stuff that gets gunked up in your brain during Alzheimer's. So those skyrocket if just after one night of sleep deprivation, only 5 hours. So you were doing 11 to 5 a.m.? That's like close enough to, that's pretty close to 5 hours of sleep. So like every night there, you were just accumulating beta amyloid over time, which is why a history of bad sleep is one of the big risk factors for Alzheimer's and neurodegenerative diseases. Where else can we go?
You already talked about
cancer. Oh my God, diabetes. So diabetes is really a just complete disruption of your insulin and leptin. You could probably even throw ghrelin into the mix there, because when you are circadian disrupted, ghrelin's not going to work, leptin's not going to work as well, and you enter that state of leptin resistance. So you're not able to, leptin is this hormone that allows you to know how full your gas gauge is, and if you can't tell how much gas you need, you're just constantly going to be filling up at every single gas station along the way, and that sort of explains the, I guess, over massive influx of nutrients coming in for someone who's diabetic, and the ability to sort of metabolize that and able to use insulin properly goes way down, because when your circadian clocks are off, you may have melatonin higher at a time than it shouldn't be, so like in the morning. This is why you should never really take melatonin the night before, because your melatonin levels will still be elevated, and when melatonin's up, insulin can't be secreted. And then that starts to cause like glucose levels to rise higher, and then eventually you get insulin resistance from that.
And then autoimmune disease and vitamin D levels. I mean, we were talking about using vitamin D supplements earlier for the autoimmune, like MS patients, or they're getting injections with like 50,000 units of vitamin D just to try and keep their levels up. But really, it doesn't raise their blood levels that much. And the doctors know that they're deficient, and they know that we have a vitamin D deficiency epidemic. But no one's really able to do much. And I wanted to talk about this, that we just think that there can be a pill for everything to fix, like whether someone's having sleep issues or vitamin D, or they're missing this and they're missing that. Like if you read papers about circadian rhythms and implications, like the 2017 Nobel Prize is given for circadian physiology. And then I read a paper on how important circadian rhythms are in all these diseases from childhood to adulthood. And then the paper talks about, in the conclusions, the implications this has for the timing for drugs. Like, How does that make sense, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. Did you, and then of course there's the Texas A&M Did you see that study where they, is it the BRCA gene or whatever that's linked to breast cancer? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
BRCA. And basically they discovered, you can Google this if you want, they discovered that that gene is directly tied to circadian rhythms. If your circadian rhythms are in good in order, you don't pull the trigger on the gene. If your circadian clocks are all messed up, you pull that trigger. And did you see the article on MSN? I think it was MSN this week, about the Air Force is trying to get earlier cancer screenings for its fighter pilots because they've got a massive epidemic of prostate cancer in people that are like 30 years old, you know, because they're flying around with a giant radar dish in between their, you know, stuff. And so it's just crazy. People, you know, I guess people just don't have the ability to see this stuff. You know, the massive depression that teenagers have and kids have today because they don't go outside. You know, I shared that picture on one of my blogs of a woman dragging her kid inside back in 1970 with the soccer ball bouncing out of his hand. And today the mom dragging the kid outside with the cell phone in his hand. Yeah. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out if you sit all day inside staring at a screen, especially at a young age, that you're probably going to feel like shit, you know?
It's really incredible because I think people are aware of it, especially the baby boomers. I think they realize how they grew up and they're seeing their children and grandchildren doing the exact opposite, and they know there's a disconnect, and we have the research to show it. I mean, we know that the World Health Organization recently changed their guidelines for screens for children and that they don't recommend any screen use for, is it age 5, which was increased age from before. And they do say that they're okay with it if the child wants to Skype like a family member. But I don't know. I just thought, I just think it's hilarious because we know that childhood obesity, physical inactivity, it does not matter. When it's like screen time is a risk factor for obesity independent of physical inactivity. So if a child is like not exercising and they're on screen time, that's really, really bad. If someone is exercising, plays multiple sports, and they have like an hour of screen time, that completely negates the benefits from the physical activity, which is really unfortunate.
It is. So you have the typical zoo human, zoo animal, zoo creature. Where do you guys recommend starting? Like, how you got somebody who's like overwhelmed, you know, they're not sleeping, they don't feel good, they're not in a good place. Like, where should somebody start first? Like, what should be the first thing they do?
I think definitely where you should start, where you can get the most benefit from first. I think circadian rhythms is a good place to start with that. And I think time and time again, every time we recommend wearing blue blockers, like 2 hours before you plan to go to bed, they think like, oh, okay, whatever. But then like their mind is like blown. They're like, oh, I was so tired. I haven't been tired in the longest time at night.
Do you know what people have said to us? They said, I don't want to wear the blue blockers because I get too tired when I need to stay up at night.
It's like a new concept for them. So it's the blue blockers. And then if you can just get someone outside, like it doesn't have to be sunrise. I mean, I know that's an A+. But just for them to be outside as the sun is rising, like, and they see that like natural light increasing, or if you can convince them like, hey, when you get to work, before you like start plugging away at emails for the next 3 hours, like just go outside, you can take your coffee outside, look at the sun, like just be outside in the sun and just be in that bright light.
Or in the shade.
Just anything where you're in a much brighter light that's designed to get your system going. And when people start to do that, they start to notice, yeah, I feel like more energetic. I have less headaches throughout the day. I'm not like completely burnt out by the end of the day. And then you just kind of build up from there, because I think circadian rhythms is where you get the most bang for your buck. And then from there, you have to challenge them to think about their environment in terms of EMF and their light at home, and then ultimately start to focus more on the more longer term installation programs. We're like, hey, we're going to start doing cold therapy X minutes, X times a week, so we can boost your mitochondrial health. That's kind of the ramp for us, at least.
Yeah, I think to recap, like we said earlier, we're kind of coming at everything from a circadian rhythm, like sleep perspective, because it kind of encompasses everything. But to start with, there's artificial light and there's natural light outside. You decrease artificial light, increase natural light, and you're already on the right track.
Yeah, it's crazy like how much my life has changed since I've made becoming a less zoo animal a priority. You know, I got some lights in the gym that the gym, I have some big doors that I open up that I keep open mm-hmm. like all the time. I have a red light in there. I've got some black lights. But, you know, just the difference between, you know, getting rid of my morning sessions. I lost a lot of clients who I really, really loved to train. Spending my mornings outside, you know, walking the dogs or sitting out front, you know, talking to the police when they come because I'm sitting out there with my shirt off. And then at night, you know, getting away from the screens, getting away from, you know, after 9 o'clock, I'm trying to put the damn thing down. And then, you know, just living a more authentic human life has made all the world a difference for me. And it's not that complicated. And, you know, if you just start with, you know, big little hinges swing big doors, if you just start with something simple like getting out in the morning, you know, driving with the window cracked, you know, in your car so you can get some more lateral light in your life. I mean, we're not telling you to go out and cook yourself. But, you know, you need to be to live a more authentic human life. We're designed to be outside. We're designed to move and do low-level manual labor all day. We're not designed to sit in a chair, you know, staring at a screen all day. That's not what we're designed. And I always tell people, like, if you think of the sun as a giant Wi-Fi router that's basically telling your body what to do, what hormones to produce, what time of day it is, all these different things, it makes it a lot easier for you to understand that the sun is telling our body, just like an animal, when, you know, like a chicken, when it should be laying eggs, when it shouldn't be laying eggs, when it's okay to breed, when it's not okay to breed. You know, all this stuff is dictated through this natural light that we have just completely blocked out of our lives.
Yeah.
So what's in the future for you guys? We're going to start wrapping this up because, you know, you guys have been so generous with your time, and my apologies for the software not living up to what it promised. So thank you for your patience.
No worries.
But where can people find you, and how can people contact you, and what do you have available for them for help and for learning?
I think our best avenue right now is our YouTube channel, Optimal Circadian Health. Just type that into the search bar there. It should pop up. And we're releasing a ton of videos, at least 3 a week, where we talk about a lot of these circadian principles from pretty much every perspective. The last few videos we've released have been like why you shouldn't skip breakfast, some of the two worst morning mistakes you can make, and what was the other one?
A lot of videos.
There's a lot of videos. I forgot
a lot
about
of videos,
that.
The melatonin, cancer, you know, everything.
It's like when a mom has 12 kids and like she kind of takes 2 minutes to name all 12 of them. That's how we are with our videos now. There's
a lot of them. So there's plenty of that to start with. So go to Optimal Circadian Health at YouTube and you can check us out there. We do have a free course coming out soon and a couple other things. So
yeah,
just follow us there and
stay tuned. We'll have some awesome things by end of November.
And you guys have a newsletter too as well, right?
Yeah, we do. We have an email list. You can find us at optimalcircadianhealth.com. And subscribe to our email list, and
we have a little PDF freebie there.
Yeah, the four most powerful ways to sleep better tonight.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, guys, thank you for your patience, and for those of you that watched my failed attempt at a live stream, thank you for your patience, and I'll make sure we put this up underneath those links so that you can see what we were actually trying to accomplish originally. So. Thank you guys so much for your patience, and make sure you go check those guys out, and I'll have all the links, and maybe I'll even, you know, dig through and find some of the links to some of the studies that they cited in here and that I talked about as well. So you guys have yourself a wonderful day, and thank you so much.
Thanks, Jim. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.